Welcome, everybody, to the Fandom Podcast Network's newest show, True Believers, a Marvel MCU podcast. Here on True Believers, we will discuss the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related television and streaming MCU universe on Disney+, including the connections to the original Marvel comics and how they relate to past, current, and future MCU universe projects. This, of course, as always, we'd like to give some spoiler warnings. In this episode, we're going to be talking more about some stuff in the past, but we always like to give you those spoiler warnings just in case we're talking about something you may have not seen yet. Now, if you joined us for the last episode of True Believers, we started a two-part series as we kind of fill in the gap until Loki comes out on June 9th, and we're looking at Marvel television during the MCU, but pre-Disney+. We're looking back. In our last episode, we looked back at the Netflix shows, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Man, Defenders, and The Punisher, talked about their impact on the MCU at the time and where they stand now, what the future might hold for those. In our second episode, we're going to discuss the more prominent show that a lot of people are constantly looking for connections to MCU, and it's maybe one of the most confusing whether it is or isn't, and that is Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but also going to talk about the other ABC projects, including Agent Carter and Inhumans, as well as a little bit of brief talk on the Hulu experiment, which included Runaways, Hellstrom, and the recently released MODOK animated series. And we're going to talk about, too, what went wrong and why we're at this place with this particular era of shows before Disney+. But before that, before we do anything else, I got to introduce my two wonderful guests here. Of course, my co-founder here in the Fandom Podcast Network, he is the host of Blood of Kings and joins me on Culture Clash and so many of the great things here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I believe he's maybe a medium-level agent at this point. Mr. Kevin Reitzel.
What's up, man? Good to be here. I got to tell you, this is going to be interesting for me because I'm kind of in not my comfort zone here because I haven't watched all of these. And one of these series I kind of gave up on, but one of them I do enjoy. So it'll be interesting to get into.
And of course, returning as well for the second part of this episode. In fact, I just think he might have come back from Tahiti. I'm not 100% sure about that.
It's a magical place.
Lee, I know you were really excited about talking about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I really, I watched every episode of this as it came out, kind of a tradition with my dad. True story, we held off on the last six episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D., kind of like we've done for a few other shows, because we just didn't want it to be over. But finally got through it. And once you said you were going to be covering these, I'm like, I got to get in there because I know these. I love them.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a lot in this episode. But before we do that, we got a little bit of Marvel news. So get your snit, your thwipped, and your kapow on, because we got to talk Marvel news. And of course, the big thing is we got a little taser of it when Marvel dropped that sizzle reel about returning to movies and honoring movies. But now we have the first full trailer for Eternals. Kevin, you and I talked about this briefly on the most recent episode of Culture Clash, where we said we would be getting more in depth here on our MCU podcast, True Believers. You said you have questions.
Well, yeah, it covers, it seems like a very long period of time with them being immortals and all that makes sense. But I've got questions on how this will tie into, of course, the current MCU. Why weren't they around for the Thanos snap? What were they doing? And the biggest question, will this be the movie that will finally tease the M word? That's mutants, by the way.
So, Eternals, Lee, how familiar are you with the Eternals?
Not too familiar with them. I know that they exist, but as I was watching the trailer, I realized that they should have had a voiceover. From the dawn of time we came, passing silently down through the ages, living many secret lives. No one has ever known we were among you until now. Like, I mean, it's Highlander, and I'm completely down for it. But I think that it could offer some interesting perspective into it, especially given that we have, you know, at least 1,000-year history with the Norse gods. And we're introducing Hercules, I guess, in Thor, Love, and Thunder, which means Zeus. So, I mean, that goes back another couple thousand years. I think this could be the thing that kind of wraps it all together and allows the the MCU to get bigger. I mean, we sort of did with Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor, but it always kind of ended up back on Earth or ended up sort of a small story. I think this allows it to get bigger.
Well, one of the biggest questions with the Eternals has been what route were they going to go use? Because the Eternals, as envisioned by Jack Kirby, have been twisted and turned so much in the Marvel Universe, and there's been so many different iterations and confusion about what their role is. It looks like, at least for the MCU, from what we can see of this trailer, it's kind of showing where it looks like they arrive maybe around the Mesopotamian era, mm-hmm. and kind of guide humanity a little bit here and there in the right directions throughout the trailer. And we see, obviously, it looks like it's going to focus on a bit of a love story between Icarus and Circe. We've also got the thing where we've stayed pretty much out of events until now. So the big question is what is bringing them in now? And of course, the big question that hit the internet is, well, why didn't they jump in when Thanos was involved? And I have a feeling this movie might actually answer that question as well. But I have some theories of what could get them involved. And I don't know if you guys would care for me to maybe go a little spoilery and say
it. Yes, I do.
I'm all for it.
Before you do, though, I have to say something. I think it's been cracking me up after you said something. Is when you're saying how convoluted the past Marvel history has been of the Eternals, correct?
Yes.
Okay. This is basically a pattern of most Marvel titles. So that when we are introduced to one of these characters for the first time or teased with a trailer, because all of these characters have a changing and convoluted past, it keeps us guessing as fans of what the hell they're going to do with these characters and what angle they're going to take with them, because we have no idea, because there's so many different possibilities. It seems like there's never been a character that's just kind of been like, this is it. This has been happening. They never went evil or they never went good. And this is what you're going to get. It seems like we're always playing that guessing game because so much has changed.
I think Spider-Man might be your most clear cut character as far as...
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But anyway, yeah, spoilery ahead, do it now.
Okay, so in the comics, the Eternals were actually brought to Earth by the Celestials, which are cosmic beings, which we have seen in the Marvel Universe, just not in the way that we're normally used to seeing them, because if you remember in Guardians of the Galaxy, Nowhere, that is actually the head of a dead Celestial.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen a Celestial. The Celestial are basically beings. They go around creating planets and then passing judgment on planets.
Well, and we see a little bit of the Celestial in the narration by Benicio del Toro in Guardians as well.
Yes, we do. So it's either going to be the Celestials are partly in the comics.
Yeah, how do the Celestials tie to the Eternals? Tell me that.
They are the ones responsible for creating the Eternals in the comics. They help create the Eternals, as well as kind of the opposite side of the Eternals, which was the Deviants. And they placed the Eternals and the Deviants on Earth. Now
the Deviants have podcasts about Highlander in Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, exactly. So the question comes up, is it going to be the Deviants as the villain because the Eternals feel somewhat responsible for the Deviants? Or is it going to be that maybe a Celestial arrives to Earth, which has been a storyline that's happened in the MCU with that too. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Obviously, I think we're going to have a little bit of a love story here with Icarus and Circe, but you also have the character of Dane Whitman, who is known in the MCU as the Black Knight. And in the comics, he had a relationship with Circe as well. Of course, Circe is the character played by Gemma Chan. So I'm very intrigued by what they're trying to set up with Eternals. It looks beautiful. It looks just fantastic.
I'm convinced anything that you say or speculate, Kyle, is not considered a spoiler.
So, all right. So, but anyway, I'm looking forward to Eternals. Obviously, we've got Black Widow coming up in just a little over a month. We've got Shang-Chi first, and then we hit Eternals. Kevin, to answer your question about mutants, I think it's very much a possibility, considering...
How would they tie mutants into the Eternals?
They could have the Celestials be the... Or not the Celestials, but the Eternals, the cause of the creation of the mutant gene. And...
All right.
So that could be a way they would do that. There's so many different possibilities to... I mean, there's a lot of things going in play. I think a lot of stuff might start getting cleared up with Loki. as far as how they might start incorporating things when you add in the time travel aspect of Loki.
Well, we thought that with Scarlet Witch, and that didn't pan out.
Yeah, well, that's hard to say. But, Lee, real quick, just besides the Highland reference, what did you think of the Eternals trailer?
I'm really excited for this, just to see, like, a change of scope and a change of storytelling. Because, I mean, with this, you know, we no longer have, like, the usual thing of a superhero finding his power. These guys are already eternal. They're already there. I'm a huge fan of Kumail Nanjiani. And I'm just, I love the idea.
Boy got ripped for this.
Yeah, no kidding. And like, I've met him a couple times. He is not a physically imposing dude at all when I met him. And suddenly he's just like, you know, he's got pecs bigger than my butt now. And I got a big butt.
Yeah, I just casting real quick. I've become a huge Gemma Chan fan because of Crazy Rich Asians, and she played a villain in Captain Marvel. So, you know, and they hid her behind a bunch of makeup. So I'm curious to see her in this film.
Yeah, it's going to be her a starring role for her in the MCU. So I'm very interested. Can't wait for this to drop. But gentlemen, let's get into the heart of the matter of this episode of True Believers. Continuing our look at Marvel television during the MCU pre-Disney Plus. And of course, there was the show that was meant to be tied in with the MCU and kind of be a attachment piece to it. And was kind of, it's been a big deal, right? And that, of course, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, of course, returned Phil Coulson to us. Little bit of history here. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ran 7 seasons from 2014 until 2020 and started off being a complimentary show to the MCU, but needless to say, by the end of its run, it was far from that. Little quote from Jed Whedon, who was one of the original creators of S.H.I.E.L.D. In July 2013, Jed Whedon said the series would work in tandem with the Marvel films, both past and upcoming, to weave in between the films and to try to make them more rewarding in both ends. He explained that each Marvel project is intended to stand alone first, but if there is any interweaving, and noted that the series had to work with the film division, be aware of their plans so as not to interfere when introducing someone or something to the universe. Bell elaborated that this was preferable so that people who did not watch the films can still follow the series and vice versa. He stated that ABC and Marvel both want the series to be able to make sense on its own, but that it was beneficial for the films to have the series fill any gaps for them due to having to be big and moving quickly through a lot of huge pieces, unlike television, which has time to deal with more nuance. So let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It ran for 7 seasons. I'm just going to give us a brief rundown on it. Each season, obviously season one, the description for it is fresh from his role in the summer's box office smash, The Avengers. Agent Phil Coulson returns to the worldwide law enforcement organization of S.H.I.E.L.D. He puts together a small, highly trained team of agents to tackle the cases that haven't been classified yet, the new, the strange, and the unknown. Season two, after helping to thwart Hydra, Coulson was appointed as director and tasked with rebuilding the agency. This won't be an easy job to accomplish with the majority of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents either killed, secretly working for Hydra, or free agents. Season 3 tended to focus more on the Inhumans as Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. returned for an action-packed third season with director Phil Coulson and agent Daisy Johnson leading the charge as S.H.I.E.L.D. searches the world for more powered people in the aftermath of the epic battle with the Jiang and her army of Inhumans. However, Coulson and the team soon find out that they are not the only group looking for these new Inhumans. Season 4 is where things start getting interesting. 4 was actually broken into 3 storylines. First was the Ghost Rider. In the aftermath of their journey to another planet, director Phil Coulson and the rest of the team are driven more than ever to put an end to the Hydra organization. Little did they know that they were up against the deadliest threat they've ever faced, an extremely powerful Inhuman Hive who was transported back from Maeth in the body of their worst enemy, Grant Ward. The team was able to thwart and kill Hive and take down Hydra, but they are still mourning the death of fellow agent Inhuman Lincoln Campbell. This was also where they introduced Gabriel Luna as Ghost Rider and also elements of the Darkhold book during this run. They also had to deal with LMDs and the anti-inhuman group, the Watchdogs, in this season, which introduced Ada, who became a key player, as in the final storyline of this series was Agents of Hydra, where Ada has plugged in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. into the framework, a virtual reality created by Dr. Radcliffe and Fitzsimmons, an insane world where Hydra reigns supreme. Season 5 finds the agents out of the framework, and now the Ada, who is now fully human, and with multiple inhuman abilities, is working with Fitz after defeating the Ghost Rider. things just go spooky and they end up in space, where in season six they leap forward in time to a dystopian future where they realize things must be prevented. They start facing multiple timelines, found family, friends, teammates, and of course season seven, a time hopping adventure that closed out the final season of S.H.I.E.L.D. Lee, when S.H.I.E.L.D. first began, especially season one and season two, it was all in on MCU timelines. In fact, I think so much so, it actually hurt the beginning of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
A little bit, yeah. I think that they had to introduce a lot of stuff. And I think it bears mentioning that this is wish fulfillment on Joss Whedon's part. They really made Serenity. They have the ship that they all love. You know, it's either Serenity or the bus, as they called it. You have the snarky captain. You have the chick with weird superpowers that you don't find out about until a little bit later. You've got the killing machine. You've got the one kind of gruff, taller guy with kind of a dark, mysterious past that you're not sure where his allegiances are. You've got the doctor. You've got the girl that he's got a crush on. Like, there's all the elements of Firefly in there. And I think that doing that kind of slowed it down a lot.
Kevin,
I need you to answer this next question and dumb it down as easy as possible in as least amount of words as possible. I still can't for the life of me remember how Phil Coulson came back from being killed in Avengers.
Okay, so he went to Tahiti, which it was a running mystery. Went through at least, was it the first
two seasons?
Yeah. Of all Tahiti, it's a magical place. That's all he would remember for it. We came to find out Tahiti was not so magical a place and more of a very traumatic place, Lee.
Yeah, it was it Kree or Skrull technology?
It was Kree.
It was Kree regeneration technology, so they actually brought him back from the dead, and it was very painful.
Who? What? How?
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Fill in the spots. Fill in the spots, because I don't remember any of this.
Was it, I think, Director Fury? Yeah, ordered it. And then they wiped his memory of it and just kind of put this blank thing of Tahiti in for him. That's why he, you know.
So he doesn't know how he came back to life at first.
No.
Yeah. He eventually finds out and has kind of the crisis of conscience.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I'll try to remember that.
And when we find out, it's pretty traumatic for the viewer as well. Because it shows a scene and it's like, okay, then. And actually, it becomes kind of a running gag that Phil Coulson can't die by the end of S.H.I.E.L.D. because he takes on several different forms besides just human by the time S.H.I.E.L.D. is
eventually
done.
Eventually, he's Max Headroom, which is amazing.
Yeah. By the end of the series, he's basically an AI. But so, Kevin, I know you said you started with S.H.I.E.L.D. early on, and I think we were all kind of excited about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because we were just coming off the Avengers. We were all curious how they were bringing Coulson back. And Lee, I talked about it too a little bit. I think the first half of season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of hurt by because it felt like it was stuck on a holding pattern, Kevin.
Oh, you're asking me now? I thought you were going to Lee.
No, I just was adding Lee into the conversation. But for the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. one, it felt like two halves of a season. The first half of it felt like it was kind of on a holding pattern a little bit.
Yeah. Just to kind of, I fell out of it, I think, around season three, to be honest with you. I did check in briefly because of the mention of Ghost Rider, and I wanted to see that incarnation, but I didn't stick with it. But what made season one and season two more captivating is that it felt like it was more attached to the current MCU films and what was happening behind the scenes. Lady Sif made an appearance. Was it season one?
Yeah, season one, she made an appearance.
So that was great. One of my Marvel crushes there. Thor missed out. So it kind of started going off on its own tangent, and I wasn't seeing the connection to the MCU theater, so to speak. They weren't mentioning enough stuff, and so that's that. Just to kind of sum up, that's where I was with it. You had talked about how good it was getting again, and several people did. And I tried in season three, and I couldn't do it.
Lee, like I talked about, it felt like the first half of the first season of S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of on hold because of Winter Soldier. And then we get the tie into Winter Soldier, and I think S.H.I.E.L.D. just took off from there.
Yeah, and really, once they start going after Hydra, which I mean, really led into like season four. You know, once they end up in space, or once Gemma Simmons ends up in space, and you kind of get the origins of Hydra. I thought that was really interesting. You know, them getting the hover carrier for Fury to kind of use in Age of Ultron, and actually getting everyone to Antarctica so they can start that final assault on Hydra in the beginning of Ultron. Thought was really cool. The indecisiveness of Marvel Disney of whether this ties in or not, I think, was the main thing. I always enjoyed the storytelling, but kind of like Kevin saying, it's like, okay, is this part of, you know, and it's not like, you know, the Daredevil verse where these things can happen parallel to everything that's going on in the MCU. Like, once you have the Inhumans in there, it's like, okay, how is this linking in? Yeah. And I really remember it was Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I'm like, okay, yeah, this cannot possibly be part of it anymore, because like, you have that giant blob growing up in the back of the Dairy Queen that they never address in S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, okay, that's exactly the kind of thing that our team would have been dealing with, and it just never mentioned in there. So that's when I figured out, okay, this is its own thing completely now.
Yeah. Kevin, I do think season one was the kind of the true, really true idea to keep this tied into the MCU, because not only did we have everything with Captain America, the Winter Soldier truly affecting S.H.I.E.L.D., we did have Sam Jackson make an appearance in the finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season one, and also one of the last great performances from Bill Paxton in season one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's when it felt like it was its true identity, to be honest with you. You know, because if you're going to do a TV series, you have to tie it into the MCU theatrical run. And that's exactly what the Disney Plus series has been doing wonderfully. And, you know, whether it's bringing some characters from the films like they did, because the one thing that I want to see more of is I want to see the characters that you see in the movies. Obviously, it's nice to see them in the TV series, but if they introduce a character or two in the TV series, it would be nice for them to get a promotion and make it into the movies. You know, it's nice to have an introduced character from the movies go and then have their own TV series and to be fleshed out. But it almost feels like, you know, they're like, well, these are like, you know, the cable version people, not the movie theater version people. So it's nice that when they can kind of go back and forth, and I would like to see more of that happen. But again, TV series flushed out more connection to the movies.
Yeah. Now, Lee, when you read a lot of the stories about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and its connectivity, there seems to be a debate of where did S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of jump the shark and not become part of the MCU anymore. And if you look, there's a few key points here. A lot of people feel that that second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of maybe the last time it truly connected with it. With you had Coulson finding the helicarrier, which ended up being the helicarrier Fury used in Age of Ultron. But there's a lot of people, too, that
felt real quick. How is that confirmed?
It was right in the show.
Yeah, and it's
second
the same
season it was confirmed? Did they say, oh, we sent this to Sokovia?
They sent it to Fury.
Yeah, Coulson and it's also got the same, whatchamacallit, ship marking, you know, like sure. NCC 1701 or whatever, you know,
I couldn't remember. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But it was also where I think the split kind of started, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wanted to do a story focusing on Loki's scepter, and they were flat out told no, because of how they were going to use it in Age of Ultron. And it became that kind of became the start of the sticking points. Season three started with the Inhuman storyline, Lee, and that kind of started ruffling the feathers. And we'll get to that in a little bit. I think after the Ghost Rider story and things they did in season four with the framework and everything like that, after that, when they went into space with the monolith and then the time travel into the future, I think it was there where S.H.I.E.L.D. really just kind of jumped the ship and became its own timeline and own thing.
I will say, though, season four was some of the most magnificent storytelling.
Oh, yeah. Season four was phenomenal.
They were unbound, and it was like watching a comic book instead of watching a movie that had comic book characters. Like the way that they were able to start with, you know, Robbie Reyes.
Yeah,
and then move into LAs. And,
yeah. Shout out to Gabriel Luna, who was awesome as Ghost Rider.
Oh God, totally. And to not use the Johnny Cage character or whatever.
Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze, yeah. I think was brilliant. You know, I love the car.
Why do you think they went that direction?
I think it's sort of like the Green Lantern, where you can kind of expand, you know, like it's not just the one character. It's not just Hal Jordan or John Stewart. And since we've already had two lackluster but fun Johnny Blaze characters with Nicolas Cage, I think it was an interesting way to go. And it also allowed them to film in a different way.
Also, too, the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider was the Ghost Rider in the comics at that point. He was the only Ghost Rider existing in the comics at that
point. So it's a title that's given to more than one character, like the Green Lantern thing is. That?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, but I love the LMD thing. I loved everything with the framework. I thought that was very good. And then, like I said, in Agent, you had the Monolith, which transported them. They wake up on the ship in the future. You had that whole storyline. They come back. I actually liked the season where they came back and they were fighting the you had the evil version of Coulson.
Yep.
And he was fighting those funky looking aliens. And of course, and then season 7, hop traveling through time. But I think when you look at it, when all is said and done, guys, and Kevin, I know you can weigh on this a little bit because of what you have watched for S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it's the characters themselves that are going to be S.H.I.E.L.D.'s legacy, because obviously Phil Coulson was incredibly popular even in the MCU before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think at least the characters of Quake and Melinda May, played by Ming-Na Wen, are going to end up being part of canon in one way or another before it's done. Kevin, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I got more to say on this, but I'm going to wait till we get to the disagreement with Feige to ask this one.
Okay. What about you, Lee?
I agree that those would be good characters to make canon. I think Fitzsimmons should be in there as well.
Yeah, I'd have no objection to
that. You know, especially like they would have been the perfect ones to bring into Endgame.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you lost Shuri, you lost a whole lot of the great scientific minds. That would have been, like, the good tie-in. But, of course, they didn't exist in that timeline because they were off saving the universe in the future. But, yeah, I think that'd be good. I will say, though, like, my problem with Quake is that they set up Skye as such a great character. And then to say, oh, yeah, she's this other character that pre-existed her, you know, instead of bringing in a new agent or something like that. Because they didn't really, you know, she's an orphan. She went to the same orphanage as Daredevil. You know, like there's all sorts of weird little tie-ins. Her powers never manifested until that season. So
yeah.
I think they just ran out of steam.
Yeah, I think with the Skye character, it was one of those things where we've got to incorporate this new popular character, because the Daisy, the Quake character had become very popular in Secret Invasion and in Secret Warriors, which was a Nick Fury-centered S.H.I.E.L.D. comic, and I think they felt that they needed to incorporate somehow. And I think this was one of the failings of ABC Disney, was they were still trying to find ways to incorporate it, keep it part of that MCU, even though they could see the handwriting was on the wall at that point.
Well, and I think this also would have been a better, you know, I mean, streaming wasn't then what it is now. This would have been a better streaming show, because then you wouldn't be locked into it's either 22 episodes or nothing.
Yeah.
And you can kind of streamline those shows and have, you know, I mean, think about how brilliant 13 episodes of Daredevil is.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to be one of those things. I don't think we've heard the last of it, and we'll talk about more of that later. But there was another ABC series that lasted for two shortened seasons that was dedicated to, still, in my opinion, one of the more popular characters of the MCU. And that is, of course, Hayley Atwell's Agent Carter. And this series was a lot of fun. I know both Kevin, you and Lee have kind of went back, at least we watched some of it here before we've done this podcast. Lee, I know you're a huge fan of Agent Carter.
Yeah, and I think this was just such a brilliant storyline, because we get a young Howard Stark, where we actually see him doing more than just be snarky. You know, we get the introduction of the origin of Jarvis in the form of Edwin Jarvis, who is part of the MCU. They actually bring him into Endgame at one point. But this was just brilliant. You know, it's kind of that 50s high tech.
Yeah.
So you could have a little bit of fun with it. And I'm sorry, Hayley Atwell, she is easy on the eyes and very good at breathing.
Yes, she was lovely. I met her in person a few years ago at a convention. It was a lovely time. Kevin, what about you? I know you've just recently rewatched at least about a season and a half of Agent Carter.
Sorry, I'm distracted. I'm watching the second season. Continue to watch the second season. What did you say?
I said you were, yeah, exactly. You've been and watching Agent Carter.
Yeah, I watched the first season originally, and so I've been watching the second season on Disney Plus, and I love how the second season is giving us backstory on actual Carter herself as a child growing up, and then making the transition into espionage and World War II and stuff like that, and also getting a background on the main villain that we have here, Whitney Frost, I think is the character's mm-hmm. name. But I also like the fact that we get the resurrection of Chad Michael Murray from One Tree Hill to, you know, an agent here. I like that as well. And I love Edwin Jarvis in this series. But as you mentioned as well, a young Stark as well, Lee. I from the movies, Haley Atwell's Peggy Carter is absolutely brilliant. One of my favorite characters is Agent Carter in the MCU. And I love the fact that this series has flushed that out, you know, because it's a character that is in the past and also one that is one of the founding members of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we get a little bit of her in Ant-Man as well, you know. A little bit older, of course, and then, of course, you know, in
Civil War
and stuff like that. But this is in her heyday, and give me post World War II espionage, you know, setting as well. I love the costumes. I love the early kind of tech that they're using, you know, which is great and stuff like that. And I absolutely love this series and. You know, I will revisit it as well.
Also, Enver Yokaj as Agent Sousa was mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yeah. And I did like the jump from the East Coast to the West Coast. I thought that was really cool that she goes out to California and Hollywood and stuff like that. I thought that was a neat take on it, too. But it was a good cast. Yeah.
And it's also the last show to use the Disney backlot at MGM Studios as a set.
Mm-hmm. Interesting you bring up Daniel Sousa, who of course ends up playing a key role in the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, let's not forget that Agent Carter was also the show that started laying little foundation hints for the creation of the Black Widow.
Yeah.
So a little timely there, considering what's coming out. But yeah, a lot of people really loved Agent Carter. It got a very strong cult following, but just wasn't quite pulling in the ratings. Again, Lee, I think this is where streaming would have been a lot better for this show.
Yeah, and I think another strong thing that they should have done is really bring in the Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the most entertaining two episodes. You know, Neil McDonough is absolutely amazing as Dum-Dum Dugan.
I love that two-part. That was great.
And, like, just the... you know, the old camaraderie, like her character completely shifts, as well as like Jack Thompson, like his perception of her. Like he thought, oh, she was just like the secretary in World War II, instead of like all the guys taking their cues from her. Like, I trust her with my life sort of thing. Like that shifted everyone else's perception of her character remarkably. And I think also, you know, a little bit more of that would have gone a long way.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should have gotten a lot more of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Carter. I think more Haley Atwell, but would have been well deserved in this case. But there was another thing that happened with Marvel TV, and that was in August 2016, where Marvel Television announced a deal with Hulu. And it was kicked off by one of the more interesting Marvel comics, Runaways, which has a very strong cult following. Josh Whedon was involved in writing a quote-unquote season of Runaways comics. It became a cult hit very quickly. The television series ran for 3 seasons and was actually fairly entertaining. And the had a couple of known faces in it. You had James Marsters, obviously, of Buffy the Vampire of fame. Why am I not thinking of the actor's name? He was on Nip Tuck and played Dr. Doom in the Fantastic Four films.
That guy, yeah. And he was the demon in the original Charmed.
Yes. Julian McMahon. He is in this too as one of the villains. Very, very well done. It was a Hulu thing. Final season, Kevin, you have Elizabeth Hurley playing Morgan Le Fay.
So, I know who Elizabeth Hurley is.
Yeah. So this was done very slightly, but there was supposed to be more Hulu shows they were actually planning a Ghost Rider show with Gabriel Luna's Robbie Reyes character.
That would have been great.
That fell through. They did release one season of the show Hellstrom, which was based off the Damien Hellstrom character, but his children. I actually have watched that. It was actually fairly well done, a good kind of mystery, dark arts kind of thing, but just never got off the ground. There was another series they were planning that got canceled. And then the final part of it just got released, and it's an animated series that they released all in one big bunch on Hulu that you can binge watch, based off the crazy Marvel villain MODOK. And apparently the animated series is very meta and very already has a interesting cult following. There was another show along with this that was actually ran concurrently on Hulu and the Freeform channel. And that was a show based off the Cloak and Dagger characters. That show actually got a little bit of critical acclaim, but just never seemed to catch on. They were supposed to do a crossover with the Runaways show that never really happened. And there was a point because that even Kevin Feige admitted that the Cloak and Dagger show was part of MCU canon. However, because of everything that has happened, none of these shows are considered MCU canon anymore. And I think it's about time we talk about that. But before that happens, we're going to take a quick break and tell you what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And we're back, and hopefully you're enjoying everything going on around the Fandom Podcast Network. Kevin, I know you and I kind of talked before. You really weren't in on any of these Hulu shows that we just talked about, were you?
No, I didn't catch me. There's nothing about them that made me think. And, you know, there was just so much on, and there still is so much on. If there was something, if these are supposed to be part of the MCU universe, I am so attached to that. You got to throw something in there to get me excited for it, to think that it's anywhere near attached to the MCU.
What about you, Lee? Did you check out any of the Hulu shows?
You know, I tried with Runaways. I really could not get into it.
Real quick, that's the one where the kids have the evil parents, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will admit, I watched the first couple episodes of that, and then I was done.
Yeah. And then there was another one more tied into the X-Men that came out about the same time. That one was a little better.
There was a couple of shows that they tried to tie in with the X-Men at the time. It was with Fox, right before Disney bought Fox, and that was The Gifted and Legion.
That's the one, yeah. Because that was the one that had Vampire Bill and Amy Acker.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, kind of like Kevin was saying, like there wasn't anything really drawing in. And I watched most of the first season of Cloak and Dagger, but one time I realized I hadn't seen it in 3 weeks and I didn't feel like watching it. And, you know, like when you think of like a Daredevil, Luke Cage, you know, all the ones that we talked about last week, even, you know, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, like there was always something drawing me in and I never really had that being drawn in with Runaways.
Interestingly enough, in Cloak and Dagger, there was a tie to the Netflix shows. In one of the episodes, one of the characters is reading a newspaper, and you see on the front page of the newspaper a picture of Luke Cage.
Really?
Yes. So a little tie in there. But at this point, guys, we've been teasing it.
Sweet Christmas.
Yes, exactly. It's about to be sweet Christmas time because we're going to talk about where did it go wrong for MCU TV before Disney Plus? And it starts really with a very public power struggle between Kevin Feige, who at the time was running Marvel Studios, but Ike Perlmutter is the other person involved in this. He was the head of Marvel Entertainment, which put him in charge of Marvel Studios. In an interview with the THR Awards Chatter podcast, Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige said that Marvel Entertainment CEO Ike Perlmutter had previously pushed back on Feige's efforts to expand the diversity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, confirming rumors of Perlmutter's long-time obstinance. Perlmutter, who became chairman of Marvel in 2001, then CEO of Marvel Comics in 2005, had previously come under fire for, according to Financial Times, reportedly making racist comments. There are also his considerable financial support of Donald Trump, according to LA Mag. Perlmutter was also infamously frugal with budgets, according to Variety. In 2015, Disney ordered a switch to the chain of command, allowing Feige to report directly to Disney chief Alan Horn. Just last October, and then at the time of this, and then just last October, Disney promoted Feige to Chief Creative Officer of all TV and comic publishing ventures in Marvel. This was about 2019.
And film.
When THR asked Feige if Perlmutter's views on diversity helped spur the change, Feige was fairly open in his brief response. "That's part of it," Feige said. "There's a lot of sides to the story you can pick up in Bob Iger's book, The Ride of a Lifetime, to learn more. I highly recommend it, but it made sense at the time. We had made 10 movies or more that managerially there was another way to go." When we did the first Avengers film, Feige, Mark Ruffalo chimed in this interview. He said, "When we did the first Avengers film, Kevin Feige told me, 'Listen, I might not be here tomorrow.'" And he's like, Ike does not believe that anyone will go to a female starring superhero movie. "So if I'm here tomorrow, you'll know that I won that battle." This was a pretty ugly fight between Kevin Feige and Ike Perlmutter. Obviously, Feige ended up winning in 2019. He was promoted to basically running everything in Marvel. This also led to the Ike Perlmutter hire of Jeb Loeb as the president of Marvel TV, leaving Marvel Entertainment as well. But this is basic. Perlmutter was kind of the guy who was in charge of a lot of the Marvel TV stuff through the Marvel Entertainment
side. Why was Ike pushing back on continuity with the MCU?
Because Ike did not believe in the vision that Kevin Feige had, and he did not agree with Kevin Feige's politics.
Okay.
Didn't believe in diversity, wanted the all right because it's all white kind of thing. And you really don't have that in S.H.I.E.L.D.
No. And in fact, if it wasn't for Kevin Feige, Ike Perlmutter would have submarined Black Panther. So there's also a little bit of the Inhumans theory, which is part of this whole situation, because if we go back to the day when Marvel first announced Phase 1, you remember the timeline start, Inhumans was right there on that timeline for Phase 1 of the MCU. And at the time, it was a very interesting deal because of at that time, nobody thought Marvel would get the X-Men rights back. Fox was cranking out X-Men related features left and right, trying to keep that property. Didn't look like anything was going to happen there. So Marvel was, even in the comics, Marvel was taking the X-Men and kind of putting them to a backseat role. And they were starting to make the Inhumans kind of more of the front row thing that the X-Men used to be. And what ended up happening was Perlmutter incorporated Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Inhumans. And what they ended up doing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really affected part of what they wanted to do with the Inhumans movie. And the other aspect of it was, is that the man who was screenwriting the Inhumans had had enough and walked away. And so what it led to was basically adding more Inhumans to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then giving us the Inhumans television series.
I just shudder calling that television.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of people involved with that. Serinda Swan as Medusa. She's a fantastic actress. And of course, Anson Mount.
Yes.
You know, love him, but like you, as much of a pretty boy as he is, you want to hear his voice. You know, there was just so many things wrong with that. And they shot it like it was an episode of Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah.
Even like the cool, huge dog. I want one. Like it just, there wasn't anything to save that show. And what they did with the Inhumans in S.H.I.E.L.D. was really good. You got a reason for it, a background, an existence, and it could have in that way tied into the MCU.
Now, Kevin, I know you said you kind of jumped out on S.H.I.E.L.D. in season three, and that was where the Inhuman aspect really started to take focus in season
three. Is this where the disagreement between Ike and Kevin started?
No, the disagreement between Ike and Kevin started around the first Avengers film, but this was a fallout effect of that, without a doubt.
So what I want to kind of get down to, and maybe it just narrows down, maybe it just comes down to our own opinions, but like I said, the first two seasons felt like they were in line with the MCU, and then it just started going off. And to me, I guess I want to know, like, I'd like to pick Kevin Feige's brain here and say, okay, were you going along with the first season or two of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as in your mind, it's headcanon and goes along with the MCU? When did it start to stray for you? Because it seemed like those first two seasons fit, okay? And then this disagreement between Ike and Kevin, I decided to just take it to another place. And then in our minds, is this where it was the beginning of the end? Like, okay, this is now going to make all Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far not canon at all, as like what we're going to apparently get from the Netflix characters if they make an appearance in the current MCU. Whatever we did see in Netflix is now considered not canon.
So here's how this kind of breaks down.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. Here's how this kind of breaks down, Kevin. In the second half of 2019, Feige was given full control. Bob Iger said, it's yours. You do, I trust
Understood.
You.
Understood, got that. Yeah.
Do with what you want.
Does he have the power to say season one and two are canon, three and so on or not? Forget it.
Yeah, he has. But
I ask is because I was at a DVD shop the other day. I saw season one of S.H.I.E.L.D. I almost bought it. The reason why I didn't buy it is because it's not considered canon.
Well, so here's where we stand on this.
Is it? I don't know.
Well, and Kevin, here's where we stand. As late as 2016, Kevin Feige was still saying S.H.I.E.L.D. was canon.
All of it?
All of it. As of 2016 was season four of S.H.I.E.L.D., which a lot of people still consider.
Until they rewrite it somewhere else?
Well, here's where the issue is. When Kevin Feige took over, he basically said, anything that was Marvel TV is not canon. Basically, he pulled a Star Wars Expanded Universe. He pulled what Lucasfilm did with Star Wars Expanded Universe.
That's not Marvel canon. TV, isn't it?
It's not canon. It's not MCU canon.
Yeah.
I'm confused. Where are we now? What?
In 2016, Kevin Feige was saying, yes, S.H.I.E.L.D. is still canon. However, okay, when he got full control in 2019, he basically said, nope, anything Marvel... He changed his tune.
Does that mean Peggy Carter is... Agent Carter is not canon?
Agent Carter is canon because she debuted in the MCU first. But what happened?
The storyline could be or could not be. Yeah.
Right now, it's kind of floating in limbo as far as the Agent Carter stuff. That would be easy to reincorporate into.
So you're saying Kevin Feige will say that Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon, but Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not.
Exactly. That's probably what he would lean.
He's
right
changed
now.
His tune on this.
The running theory is this, is that Kevin Feige is going to pull a Lucasfilm. Remember, Kevin, when Lucasfilm said, okay, all the Expanded Universe, yep, out the door, not canon. And wow, now they've been kind of going back and cherry picking it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is what the thought process here is, what's going to happen with these Marvel TV shows. The Agent Carter
Which
stuff.
Which include the Netflix, obviously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, obviously we've already talked about Charlie in the last episode, how like Charlie Cox and Jessica Jones as Daredevil and Jessica Jones could reappear in Disney Plus series. There's a lot of talk with the Sam Jackson Secret Invasion show coming up. that you could possibly see the return of Quake or a version of Quake, Melinda May, and maybe some of the other characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe even played by the same actors.
I have this DVD shelf over here. You know how I love physical media, and I have its own shelf taken out of the alphabetical stash I have over here. And it's just Marvel MCU in the order, like the timeline order. And I have Peggy Carter in there, Agent Carter in there, but I got nothing else below that. Like no Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., no Inhumans. I never even gave those a shot, because it just didn't feel like Marvel to me. So I should leave. What you're saying is I need to leave Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. out of that little.
Here's the thing. Season one and season two can definitely be MCU. Okay. Like they work with the plot line. They don't directly negate anything. Okay. But once you get to season three with the Inhumans, that's not addressed at all.
I can ride with that. All right.
And then season four could be season five. Season five kind of could. Season six would be like the time slip.
Yeah.
Because they leave, they at one point they're actually talking about at the end of season five, oh, there's something weird going on in New York.
Yeah.
Which could be the fight with Thanos. Ebony Maw.
Yeah.
But then they go and they fly into the future and then they come back. So that could be an alternate timeline where the Maw didn't even get the stone.
It seems to me the more natural headcanon that could still work is keeping season one and two of Marvel Agents S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. If it gives you any sense, about a month ago on Disney Plus, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was removed. It's still on Disney Plus, but it's removed from the Marvel. It's just part of the Disney section now. It is not part of the Marvel figures. Section.
Yeah. Anymore. Well, that's good news for Agent Carter because it's under the Marvel.
that should be a tipping point. I agree with what Lee says. I think when it's all said and done, if they're going to reintroduce these characters, they could easily just say the first two seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D. were canon and everything else after that was not.
There was a gas leak at Greendale.
Yeah, exactly. So Bobby Ewing woke up in the shower.
Yeah.
but my question is this, guys, is if we talked a little bit about this with the Netflix shows. If they were to bring aspects of these shows back as canon, we talked a little bit about S.H.I.E.L.D., but who would you want to see? Kevin, I'm going to ask you first. I know you're not as familiar, but are there any characters from your time with S.H.I.E.L.D. that you would like to see incorporated back into the MCU? Obviously, Agent Carter.
I think the whole cast from season one and two, it would be nice if they got a shout out somehow, or a cameo somewhere. Because they worked for me. They felt like, these young characters that could finally, be part of the Avengers, at least a supporting cast for them, and Agent Coulson, to me, I wish he would come in again in a future MCU. If anyone needs to come back, he needs to. Why haven't we gotten more Agent Coulson in the movies? This I do not get. And this is criminal.
Now, Lee, Kevin brings up Phil Coulson. That was always one of the biggest things with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is everybody wanted to see the Avengers reaction to Phil Coulson being alive again, and we never got it.
Yeah. What the hell?
Well, I think that the Avengers needed to keep him dead. Because, Phil Coulson's last words were almost, they need someone to avenge. I really wish that Coulson had stayed dead, even though I loved what they did with his character.
We're not going to get the Coulson and Captain America reunion because Captain America is not around that we know of.
Maybe
unless he's on the moon. I don't know.
Maybe old Cap met up with Coulson and then, they're drinking buddies now. So they hung out in Tahiti for a while.
And then, of course, I would love to see the characters from the Netflix series pop up back. So,
But I think with the original cast, I'd like to see August Christopher back as Deathlok.
J. August Richards, you mean?
Or J. August Richards, yeah. He was fantastic as that. Anytime I can have Deacon Lockman, who played Jia Ying.
Yes.
Whatever happened with Adrian Palicki's character?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see her come back as Mockingbird.
Yeah. So she's not dead.
She got sent off, and they were going to do a spinoff show and then decided not to. So,
okay. Which is why she's on the Orville. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So, well, with that, we're going to wrap things up here at this episode of True Believers. And hopefully we cleared up a little bit of some of the confusion about MCU canon. I think it's like a comic book. It can change all the time. We could have a crisis or a secret war or something like that. Scrolls could get involved. It could get ugly. But, you know, that's comic book life, folks. You get accepted to it. But you know what? I want to thank you guys all for joining on True Believers. Kevin, Excelsior points. You've been banking for a little while. By my count now, after today's episode, you got about 15 Excelsior points.
I'm going to bank them. I want to bank them.
No,
no. I want something good.
They've told me you've reached your bank out capital, but you are going to get something cool.
All right.
You are getting Lola. In honor of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you are getting Lola the
car. Oh, the car?
I'm going to steal that from you.
Don't touch Lola. Yes. I was going to say either that or Ghost Rider's car. I'll take either one of those, but Lola, I'll take.
The only problem is the Stark Tech isn't working quite properly, so I don't know
about it. I could just look at it. I can sleep in it. I can lay on top of it. Yeah, I could tell it's a pretty girl. Yeah, that's fine. Oh. I can stand out there dressed as Coulson and go, don't touch Lola.
That reminds me, Mac has to come back into the MCU. He's awesome.
Yes, I love Mac. Of course, you can find True Believers as part of the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, that starts at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com, where you find our master feed. Not only are True Believers there, but all the wonderful shows of the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, we have our YouTube channel. We are in the midst of refreshing that a little bit, but it's going to find all the podcasts there, as well as some great exclusive live events that we've got planned for this summer. Of course, you can find us on Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, or on Twitter at FanPod Network. Of course, I'm Kyle. You can follow me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can people find you on social media?
Well, you can find me here on the Fandom Podcast Network, and also Lee and I host Blood of Kings, our Highlander podcast here on the network, so check us out. We also have the Blood of Kings podcast fandom Facebook group, too, but you can reach me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And Lee, where can people find you these days?
You can summon me using the Darkhold. Also, I'm on Twitter and
Instagram. Hold on. Did you say Darkhold or Hole?
Darkhold.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Don't worry. I didn't steal your screen name.
Wait a minute. Which version of the Darkhold are we talking about? The S.H.I.E.L.D. version or the WandaVision version?
I'm in the S.H.I.E.L.D. version. So. Okay. Okay. Because Ada is hot.
Yes, Ada is hot. Also, a quick shout out to Dave Fielding. He runs our Facebook page. You can find him on Twitter at Beardy Dave or on Instagram at GOT Ragdolls. Of course, to visit our TeePublic store. We are working on getting some True Believers gear up there as well, tpublic.com. You can find all the gear of the Fandom Podcast Network. Also, we love reviews, especially on iTunes. Find us on iTunes, drop us a review, let us know how we're doing. We love to get your input so we can always strive to make better podcasts to feed your ears. Guys, this has been a lot of fun looking back at the history of TV during the MCU era. Somewhere down the line, I'd like to get back to some of that 80s TV history a little bit too. And Kevin, I know you're kind of anxious to talk a little Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I think Lee could be wrangled into that as well.
But coming up, we got.
So I was just going to say, to me, that was my like real Marvel introduction, you know, along with the, you know, I know everyone says, oh, well, you know, Howard the Duck was the first one. I'm like, Marvel. Yeah.
For me, it was that really bad Captain America TV movie with the motorcycle. Oh, and the clear shield.
No, I never saw that.
Nicholas Hammond as Peter Parker.
Fair enough.
About the same time as that bad Captain America. But thanks to you guys for this fun journey. And hopefully we're going to see some of these characters again in the MCU. I don't think we're done with them all, but looking forward to it. Our next episode, it's time to get back into Disney+. It's time to start looking at some anomalies and some time travel kind of things. And Loki. June 9th, Loki. Of course, True Believers will be back then to cover everything that is going to happen with Loki, because I think it's going to be a whole lot.
Just a little programming note, too. We're looking to record those. Since those are going to be coming out on Wednesdays instead of Fridays, we're going to probably recording either Thursday or Friday night and release it to you by Sunday, Monday, the latest.
So with that, Kevin, do you have your Tesseract still? Because I need to borrow that.
It's either that or I do, but don't touch a Tessie.
It's either that or I'm going to touch Lola. One or the other.
Can't touch both. No, sorry.
As always, thank you for listening. And until next time, make ours Marvel.